If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Hour number two here on 97.1 FM Talk. Show Beamer in for Mark Reardon. Hope everyone's had, this is kind of a strange week, right? You've got a lot of people that take off this week. You've got some people that will work the first day and then take the rest of the week off. But whatever it is you're doing, getting back into the regular groove, still enjoying the holidays, you know, whatever it is you're doing, hope you're having fun. So I started off the show saying I was finally dry from the Bills game. And let me tell you guys, it was an experience. I've been to rain games before, but yesterday was, it was weird because you would think a 425 game that it would start a little warmer and get colder. It was actually the opposite. We got warmer throughout the night. We were actually at 50 degrees 4 o'clock this morning, and then now we're under 20 degrees. But it was the weirdest thing. But I mean, once you're wet, you're wet. And I had four layers on top, so water did not get through to the skin until about the second half. But it was miserable, and we started tailgating. Yeah, it was awful. And we started tailgating at 1, and my wife's friend from Spain, well, they live in that country between Spain and France now that sounds like an amazing country. They were visiting, and so they were at the game. And that's, so I think, the only reason my wife went. I don't think she went because of me. I think she went because she wanted to see her friend that she hasn't seen since our wedding. So we got there 1 o'clock, started tailgating, and then, of course, we want to hit like three tailgates on our way into the stadium. It was just miserable, and you know, you've got all the ice melting, so you've got this muddy mess on the walk up to the stadium. But you know what? Not an empty seat in that place when the game kicked off yesterday at 4:25.
It's right here. So, it was the cold as opposed to, was it the rain or the cold that was so hard?
So it was the rain, you know, the cold at first, but then we were in the 40s by the end of the game. But the rain, and then when the rain stopped, the wind would pick up. So you never really had a break, you know, because the rain stopped for about half of the second quarter, and that was about it. But you didn't get a break because as it wasn't raining, you're just getting this nasty wind just making everything on your body cold. You know, it was, I'll have to say, I mean, I'm happy I've got the gear to not, you know, I didn't feel anything, but when we got home, I mean, the layers are just wet clothes that were sitting in our laundry room.
That's hideous. That's the worst of it. Fred has a jacket that will prevent that, right? But I mean, if that didn't, there's nothing worse. Okay, just as a person who runs, or used to at least, the worst thing that can happen is your socks get wet.
Yes.
Because then it ruins everything. If everything's uncomfortable, you don't feel good. And obviously, if your socks are wet, probably the rest of you is. But so I get it. I couldn't sit there in rain and wind. I'm past that point in my life where I would find that even remotely attractive.
Did it help that the game went to like the last play?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, the first half, Fred, it felt like the first half was crawling because the Bills couldn't do anything, even though we all know that Josh Allen didn't fumble that ball. But you know, the Bills weren't doing anything on offense. It was just kind of a blah first half, and you know, I mean, like I said, you had that part in the second quarter where there's no rain, but it was just everything on you was just feeling miserable because of that wind. But I'll tell you this. This is the reason I would never have missed that game. And you could tell me the same thing would happen, and I would do it again. The second to last game in that building. Like, I put a lot of stock into, I mean, these tickets were going for, now I have cheap tickets, all right? My cheap seats were going on the secondary market for $300 and $400.
Woo!
So if I wanted a payday, I could. But I could not justify missing the second to last game. It's just like this weekend. I know Mitch Trubisky is probably going to start most of the game. We don't know who's going to be kicking because the Bills just let go of Bagley. But there's not anything, nothing would keep me from that game. I mean, obviously, an emergency.
Well,
but
I get it. And apparently everybody else felt the same way because they were all there too.
Yeah, yeah. And the most annoying thing was, of all of it, were the Eagle fans. I mean, Philadelphia sport fans, they were annoying. Like, you won because Josh Allen didn't hit a wide open receiver. And they're like, they're yelling at fans. They're going, oh, there's your new stadium. There will be zero Super Bowl banners. Ha, ha, ha. Like,
oh, geez.
You just have to hear all that crap as you're walking out. But yeah, it was, I wish it was snow. Like, I actually wish the crap that's falling in Buffalo right now was falling yesterday. It would have made it even colder with snow blowing would have been a lot more fun than that. That was just a downpour of miserable rain. And at the end of the day, I'm going to be honest, it was a miserable game.
Yeah.
So I just kept hearing them say, now the game was not actually in Buffalo. It was in Orchard Park.
Yeah, that's where Orchard Park, New York.
Yep. So is that close?
Yeah, so Orchard Park is in the South Towns, so it's about 15 minutes from the city. I actually used to live right down the street from the stadium. So 15 minutes south of the city, and that's been the big debate here, is, you know, why didn't the city of Buffalo improve infrastructure when they knew a new stadium was going to be built, so it would make downtown more attractive? But, of course, we just have, you know, idiot politicians, and nothing was done. So the Bills will be playing Orchard Park for the next 30 years at least.
Yeah.
The Bills have not played in the city since O.J. Simpson was the running back.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And O.J. was actually the running back for the first season in the stadium that will be closing after next week.
Mm-mm-mm.
So that's how long it's been since they actually played in Buffalo.
Huh. Wow.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Yeah, it is, and, you know, it's going to suck having to watch the playoffs from home, but I don't know. After yesterday, I love my Bills. I love sports. I love football. But I'm going to be honest with you. As soon as that pass was incomplete, I could not wait to be home with the heater on, under a blanket. Like, I got home and I took a hot shower as soon as I got home. I mean, my hands were all wrinkly because the gloves were no good. They were soaked before I even put them on. So my hands were all wrinkly. I mean, it was miserable.
I was thinking of you the whole time because I watched the game, you know, in my living room. In a relatively warm living room. But I knew you were a season ticket holder. So I was like, oh, Joe's there. He's got to be dying.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, because the play where Josh Allen, I think, went forward with his hand, you know, went forward and they called it a fumble. Usually, me being the nerd I am, I would pull my phone out and watch every replay I could find on social media. But there was no instance I was pulling my phone out except to take my, you know, kickoff picture. There was no instance I was pulling that phone out yesterday. I mean, it was soaked. It was miserable.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it was something. But like I said, if the same thing happened, which it won't because it's going to be 20 degrees colder on Sunday. But nothing, like I said, no weather event will keep me from the game. And for the first time since I was in college, the Bills will be wearing red helmets for their final game.
Ooh, interesting.
At Highmark Stadium. So that's one thing. And they're selling a final game beer stein. Of course, they're selling it. You know, why would they give us anything for free?
Right. they need money.
Yeah, of course. They need to pay back that $2 billion stadium that's sitting across the street. One final thing. The ironic thing is, if that game had been played next year, I would not have felt a drop on me. Because all but the first 18 rows of the new stadium are under cover.
Yeah.
So if that game is next year, I will be as dry as can be after the tailgate.
That's nice-ish.
it's a nice what if. What if it was next year?
I love watching football from my living or from my, you know, house when it's snowing. I think that's my favorite sort to watch. But being there is a whole different deal. So rain has to be the worst scenario.
I wish I was like that. My wife wishes I was like that because she doesn't understand. I just, and I know at 37 I should grow out of it. I have this FOMO, like this fear of missing out. If I'm not at a game, I'm like ticked the whole game that I'm not there. It's ridiculous to be this old and still have that problem. But like I have this FOMO. That's why I told my wife. I said I'm getting seats in the new stadium. Like I'll pull out a savings. I can't go without having it. And I know it's something I gotta learn to get rid of, but that's just my mindset. Like I am miserable if it's a home game and I'm sitting watching it on my couch.
Just don't get them in the first 18 rows.
Oh, yeah, no
well, Fred, I don't have the I don't have the money to get him in the first 18 rows. you don't have to worry. I actually, my new seats were $750 a seat for PSL, and it was literally a seat over from seats that were $1,500 a seat for PSL. So I actually got a heck of a deal in the new stadium. So looking forward to it. And yeah, that was my experience yesterday. Feeling great today. The heat's working in the Buffalo studios. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Sue for Sue's News.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk on a Monday. And as we do this time every day, it's time for Sue's News.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Welcome back, Fred.
Hey, thanks.
The boys were in town.
It was good. It was great. They were here for a whole week.
Oh, that's nice.
So we did lots of good things.
Well, the weather was so warm it had to freak them out.
Yeah, they brought in lots of sweaters and didn't get to wear them.
I love that at one point you said they were each taking turns riding your wife's e-bike.
Yeah, that's right. And they were just driving on the Grant's Trail.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. It was weird. Okay, how about the crazy winds yesterday? I mean, I'm out walking and sweating. At 2 o'clock, I told Ethan this. I look at my clock. You know, I'm obsessed with the hourly forecast. So at 1, I'm like, ooh, I better run or get a walk in before it happens. At 2, I'll take Oscar out. And Oscar the Bulldog will go, and it was 72 degrees, and then just like clockwork at 3 when they said, there's a wind advisory in effect, whoosh,
you know,
huge.
I went over to my sister's house to watch the Bills game, and you know, when I went over there, I had a short-sleeve shirt on, and when I came out after the game, I was looking for a winter coat.
Yeah, it was was it like that in Buffalo, Joe, or no? I mean, you're raining. Yeah.
Today we have the snow wind mix, and at the airport the winds were gusting at 79 was the top gust at the airport this morning.
Woo! Yeah, that's weird.
The highest I saw overnight was 26 here, and it was freaking windy.
It
I heard
was
it like
nuts.
Banging against like our window. It was so windy.
Yeah, it really was bad. I couldn't get Oscar to go out after that. There was stuff blowing in the yard. He doesn't care for that, Fred. And we're lucky it wasn't snow. It wreaked havoc on air travelers yesterday. One report said 3,200 flights were delayed.
I know Shane flew from St. Louis to New York without a problem.
Okay.
Noah went from St. Louis to Chicago, and he said taking off in Chicago on the second leg of his trip was really scary.
Yeah, I bet.
It was very turbulent.
Ugh, no thank you. By the way, happy National Pepper Pot Soup Day. What?
Pepper.
That's right. Pepper Pot Soup is highly seasoned soup prepared with peppercorns, small bits of meat, tripe, and I'm out.
What is tripe?
Tripe, I think it's the stomach of something, isn't it?
Huh?
Or intestines? Which one is it, Fred? Can somebody Google that for me?
I think they're the same.
That's a good point. Maybe. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not eating that, but it is Pepper Pot Soup Day. They say that the dish may be more familiar by the name of Philadelphia Pepper Pot because it was brought to the area by people from the West Indies in the Caribbean. I have never had it.
It's the edible stomach lining.
Thank
Mostly from beef, so I'm guessing mostly from cows.
Okay. That is absolutely disgusting.
That is not happening.
No, thanks.
It's also National TikTok Day, and this apparently is the day that reminds you that the year is coming to an end, and if there's something you wanted to complete by the end of 2025, you've got to get it done now. You know, just today, we were paying the tax on some property, that sort of thing. So property tax, real estate tax, if you haven't done it, get that done. It's getting close. Fred, did Marie already pay it?
Oh, yeah, she did.
Yeah, she's on it. I get torn between that. I don't want them to have it too early, yet I don't want to be late.
Yeah, we do it right away so we don't have to worry.
Yeah, I get it. All right, TikTok, thank you to Fred for finding this story, has surpassed YouTube and Instagram as the most popular social app for news. News! Among 18 to 29-year-olds in the U.S. Okay, Ethan, you're in that box. What say you?
It kind of scares me.
Yeah?
It kind of scares me a little bit. Because you don't know, I guess this is, it's not just TikTok that does this, but, you know, the people that are putting out that stuff, who knows whether stuff is legitimate.
Yes.
And I guess you could say the same thing for, you know, legacy journalism as well. But it's just scary because, you know, 18-year-olds are so easily influenced.
Yes.
You know, they could see so many things and all of a sudden, bam, an algorithm looks a specific way and they're believing, their belief system's completely changed.
I also think the shortness of all the clips is a problem.
Well, it's a huge problem.
There's no context, even if it were accurate, right? 43% of young adults say they regularly get news from TikTok. Compared, now that was in 2025, compared to 41% for both YouTube and Facebook. Social media is the top source of news for 18 to 29-year-olds. 76% say they often or sometimes get news from social media. What do you do? What do you do about this?
I'll tell you, I've been on TikTok. I've never seen a news story on TikTok.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of interesting stuff.
What does that mean? Yeah, but that's probably because you aren't interested in whatever that feed is, right? You have to look up otters and then get all otter videos or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not an active, regular user on TikTok, but, you know, every now and then someone sends me a clip and I click on it, but it's never news, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no kidding. Young people on TikTok consume news through commentary from news influencers and user-generated videos tied to current events, not just traditional news outlets. And I think the influencer thing is just, it's just a free-for-all.
Yeah, and obviously there are people out there that, you know, I think it is good that it's heading in this direction because it isn't solely with, you know, the CBSs, the NBCs, the ABCs of the world. The problem is that there's also an opposite extreme of that where people can just kind of say what they want and all of a sudden they build a little bit of a following and, you know, it's the same exact thing on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Ugh, it's not good. At 2026, of course, I'm changing topics, is America's 250th anniversary. I kind of love this. So during the ball drop in New York City at midnight on New Year's Eve, they're also going to release a bunch of red, white, and blue confetti in Times Square.
Oh, nice.
So if you're out there, they'll do that at 4 minutes after midnight. Sorry, crowd. They'll do the ball drop and then a whole big bunch of confetti. And I thought, well, that's impressive since it's in New York. I think the rest of the world's like, wait, you still want to be in America? I'm not sure.
Yeah, crowd's not very patriotic.
And this is a collaboration with One Times Square and a nonpartisan group called America 250. So that kind of gave me hope today. Oh, and it sounds like the ball itself will have some sort of fancy design. So if you can stay up that late, that will not be me.
Sue, 11 o'clock? Okay. We have the next day off.
Ethan,
come
4:45
on,
every morning. Yeah, I'm dead by then. And a second ball drop in Times Square scheduled for July 3rd this year. So they're going to do another one. For, you know, just before the 4th of July. You know?
I like that.
That gives me hope for something.
Yeah, unless Mondani puts an end to it. Like, you know, we're no longer
right. We've taken the funding away from that. That's why the fact that it's from One Times Square, but also a nonpartisan group called America 250. There may be hope that that will actually happen. All right, 3,000 Americans were polled. The top thing we want to do on New Year's Eve is, Fred,
stay home.
That is
nice.
Correct. Stay home and watch Netflix. Joe, are you too old to go out? What's the scene?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've done everything that you could do on New Year's Eve. And yeah, I mean, a few years ago, my wife and I fell asleep 3 hours before it was New Year's.
So yep.
We'll be lucky if we make it to the ball drop. And, you know, New Year's Day is colonoscopy prep for me. So I've got other issues.
Wow. That's fun.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Happy New Year.
Yeah,
that's in the too much information.
Yeah, the TMI category. Right, yeah. 35% said binge watching Netflix is the top way they'd like to ring in the new year.
Yeah, you know why?
Why?
Because Stranger Things series finale comes out on New Year's Eve. That's
and you, by the way, young Ethan has watched the latest that dropped on Christmas, and
first two episodes were very good. And the third one, well, let's just say that it was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, that's the one where they had a coming out issue, which is fine, but no one cares.
Second,
and that's not part of the plot.
Of the show.
Yeah. Ugh, well. By the way, 24% say they would rather go to a big New Year's party with friends. Okay. And number three, get some sleep. Huh? I relate to those people. And there is also number four. This is just depressing. Scroll through social media on your phone. 10% of people said they'd like to spend New Year's Eve doing that. What?
That 10% probably does that every day.
Exactly. The remaining 11% said other as a choice or no preference. If you combine social media and streaming, it means almost half of us think staring at a screen is the best possible thing to do.
I've always enjoyed game nights with family on New Year's
Thank
Eve.
You.
I was never
a
huge
nice
oh, let's
thing.
Go out and.
Yes.
But I always thought that like game night, you know, playing, you know, the Wii or the Switch was always fun, some board games. But yeah, I get one to stay home. But yeah,
you can play a board game. I think that sounds nice. All right, and finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. All right, this is my last Christmas one because I realize it's this week. Tinsel was invented in 1610 in Germany. And at one point in history, it was even made out of real silver or later lead foil. Don't be eating that. On the plus side, lead tinsel would not tarnish like silver. And that's why they used it for a while until they came up with the modern version. And that's it for Sue's News.
Thank you, Sue. When we come back, we'll be talking with Brent Sadler on 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey, welcome back. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Thank you so much for making us a part of your day today and every day. We are joined by Brent Sadler. He is a Heritage Senior Research Fellow on National Security at the Heritage Foundation and joins us now. Brent, good afternoon. Hello?
Yeah, hey, can you hear me?
Hey, Brent. Yeah, sorry. I think that was on my end. Brent, we've got a lot going on, and I want to start with the Trump-Zelensky meeting. President Trump met with Zelensky. They had a press conference. He then spoke with Putin of Russia. Where are we in this conflict, and what to expect in the next few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting kind of dance that's been going on for the last few months. I remain skeptical that we're going to have a breakthrough in a ceasefire to the war in Ukraine. Clearly, both sides, the Ukrainians and the Russians, still have a lot of fight left into them. But there's a few things on the battlefield that make me very suspect that the stability of that front line is very brittle. But it could go either way. In the meantime, there hasn't really been a change on the pressure on Putin to really kind of compel him to kind of come to the table. Zelensky seems willing. It's Putin's the party that's not really willing to really, in true good faith, enter into ending this war at this point.
As this continues, I mean, does this put people outside of Ukraine at risk? I mean, could Russia be expanding? Where does this conflict move to if this continues for another year or so?
Yeah, this argument's never really made sense to me, because after the first weekend of the war back in February 2022, it was clear that Putin was misled, or at least his intelligence agencies horribly misjudged the resolve and the capacity of the Ukrainians to resist. So the last thing the Russians would be able to do or want to do is to expand the war that they had already horribly misjudged and were at the risk of losing. So I still think that's the case. They want to keep the main thing the main thing, despite the bluster and the threats elsewhere. So call their bluff in many ways when Putin tries to threaten escalation elsewhere. So at least right now, I don't see that as likely. In the long term, say Russia resets, and it really matters how they end this war in Ukraine. If they reset and they decide they want to take a bite of someone else's territory, I think countries like Georgia should be on alert. I think the next, which is a far second, is NATO member countries like the Baltic states, because when you take on a NATO country, you take on all of NATO. And I don't think Russia's ready to do that.
And when it comes to Ukraine, I mean, there's no way, if this conflict goes on, if the conflict ends, I mean, there's just certain pieces of land that Russia will never give up, right? That it's a non-starter, yeah, if you're talking about certain conquered, in their words, conquered land.
Yeah. Well, the history kind of matters in this. And so Crimea was, before Ukraine, after the Soviet Union was dissolving, Crimea was kind of its own independent republic for a period of time. And the majority of the people there voted to join Russia, not Ukraine. But in that 1994 deal, Ukraine was kind of formed and reasserted as what we know the borders officially ever since, to include Crimea. But the people in Crimea had voted differently to go to Russia. I think Crimea is beyond Ukraine's ability to take militarily, even if they wanted to. The Donbas, which are the two states, Luhansk and Donetsk, there's been an interesting history there as well, where those two areas were part of Russia Federal Republic rather than Ukraine, if you go back to Khrushchev's time. So those three states, Crimea, Donetsk, Luhansk, I could see those being very hard for Russia for Putin to give up. But the other places like Zaporizhia, Kherson, these, I think, Putin says he's annexed them. I think this is a place where the Ukrainians have a much stronger case, both militarily and also historically, to push back on. It's not to say that tomorrow they have a ceasefire. They don't have to acknowledge any of this border. They just stop the fighting where it is.
Now, Brent, moving over to China, as they have announced major military drills around Taiwan. Oh, what can you tell us about that and the significance of that?
Yeah, so very significant. It doesn't appear to be a response to arms sales to Taiwan, which very large package was basically penned about 2 weeks ago. Normally, when the Chinese are going to make a political statement with their military forces, it's about 3 to 5 days after the offending incident, and the Chinese go out of their way to make a lot of public statements as to why they're doing it. That's not the case on this. Of course, it's also been cover for them to continue to perfect their war planning and to train their military for a blockade and subsequent invasion of Taiwan. this looks exactly like that. Again, no surprise. They've been doing this at scale since August of 2022. It's unusual that it's happening in the winter months, because typically the end of the year, you've got, you know, recruitment cycles, bringing in new sailors and soldiers that you have to train up. Normally you start at a basic level, and then the weather is not exactly, haven't been a sailor in those waters myself, not exactly the ideal time to be doing major military drills either.
Now, I mean, at the end of the day, China wants Taiwan, right? Is that, I mean, that's the goal here?
Yeah.
Eventually at some point?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is on this, and I think Beijing is realizing it, that there's not going to be a peaceful, absorption of Taiwan into mainland China. The people in Taiwan have seen what the Chinese Communist Party is about, and they don't want anything to do with it. And over the last 10 years, 15 years, the people in Taiwan who had typically identified as Chinese are now increasingly identifying as Taiwanese, which means this peaceful reunification kind of idea over time is evaporating. And Xi Jinping knows it, and he's getting anxious. And that means more likely for a military solution.
Where does the United States play a role in this? As we know, the last administration wouldn't say that Taiwan was its own independent land. Where does the current administration stand, and where, if America would get involved?
Yeah, so our official position, U.S. government's official position, going all the way back to the 70s with Nixon's great rapprochement to Beijing, has been that the United States takes a position that the dispute between the Chinese nationalists in Taiwan and the Chinese Communist Party in Beijing is a dispute to be resolved peacefully, and the United States would work to ensure that it's resolved peacefully. And so we don't recognize Taiwan's independence, but at the same time, we want this civil war that's been ongoing. That's what's actually the state of affairs. To be resolved peacefully, and we'll arm Taiwan to ensure the military balance to that effect. So we don't have to take a side on Taiwan's independence or not, but if the Chinese Communist Party decides to attack, they will have invalidated all of the understandings that go back to 1972-73 timeframe with the Chinese Communist Party. And at that point, I'd say independence might be on the table for the U.S. to back.
Very interesting. I feel like this is a dispute that doesn't get the attention of a lot of other overseas disputes.
In Asia, it is the most important, and it's very well discussed and covered. But yeah, here in the United States, it's like the dog that's not barking, and until it actually starts, it's easy to not be aware of it. But a major war, like on the scale of World War II scale, we're very close to that in Asia. And it's to our detriment that we're not paying more attention to what's happening around Taiwan. So hopefully these massive exercises that the Chinese are doing right now around Taiwan will be another learning education and reminder how dangerous and how tense things are in Asia right now. And it does affect Americans directly, economically, and also there's 50 to 80,000 American citizens in Taiwan living or visiting at any time. So if the Chinese Communist Party decides to take a shot at the Taiwanese, they're going to kill a lot of Americans. And I think we're in the fight politically, whether we want it to be that case or not.
Hey, Brett, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That is Brett Sadler, Heritage Senior Research Fellow on National Security. When we come back, we're talking with KSDK Sports Director Frank Cusimano. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. And welcome back. Final segment of the second hour. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. And we welcome back on KSDK Sports Director Frank Cusimano. Frank, happy Monday.
Good to be with you. I know I'm doing a little better than you because you got to watch that Buffalo Bills painful loss. It was so exciting down the stretch, and you never see Josh Allen make a bad play at the end of a game. That was tough.
It was tough, but Frank, I mean, given that opportunity, I'm still going with Josh over Mike Bagley.
Yes, I would not argue. Yes.
Yeah, and I was telling them I'm dry. I finally dried. The only thing still wet from the game are my gloves. I got to throw those in the dryer when I get home. But
just imagining it on that final drive? Did it almost stop raining for just a little stretch?
It did. The last like 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, we had a lull in the rain. But of course, for the walk back to the car, Frank, it ramped back up. But we did have a little bit of a lull. But you know that after Sunday, we kind of have a clear picture of what the NFL playoffs are going to look like, and we're just, I think two teams are playing for, well, four teams are playing for two spots this weekend.
Yeah, and I'm particularly excited about the Sunday night game. I host a show on an NBC affiliate, KSDK, and that final game, Ravens and Steelers, I can't picture any right-thinking American not watching that game, you know, to determine the final playoff spot in the NFL playoffs.
Oh, you know, my eyes will be on it. You know, we look at the seeding, and it makes for exciting, right? We got the Panthers, Bucks on Saturday. We got the Ravens, Steelers playing for a spot. It's either in or out. But, you know, the NFL's got to do something because the Bucks nor Panthers should be hosting a playoff game while the Niners or Seahawks are playing on the road.
Yeah, it's a difficult call because you want to, you know, reward the team that wins the division. But this year you're going to have two division winners that don't need to be rewarded. But I see where you're coming from.
As we move on, you know, the Bills, it took them to the second half to actually do something yesterday. Missouri just could not get things going against UVA. It was a game of struggles in the Gator Bowl.
And I got to tell you, Joe, it was unbelievable on how many things could go wrong on a single play. So it was fourth and two with the two-minute warning approaching. And what they should have done is they should have let it go to 2 minutes, think about what they're going to do, and then run the play. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two is the best player on their team and one of the best players in America, Ahmad Hardy, was not on the field for the fourth and two. Okay, that's mistake number two. Mistake number three is Jamal Roberts, their second-best offensive player, did not see the ball on a fourth and two. That's mistake three. Mistake four is they allow a passing quarterback who's not particularly athletic to run the ball on the most important play of the game. Mistake four. And then mistake number five is that quarterback on a fourth and two goes out of bounds. Now, look, I know you don't want the quarterback to be hit, but when it's fourth and two and the game is on the line, you don't mind if your quarterback is smashed to smithereens as long as you get the first down. I mean, I don't know how many things can go wrong on one play, and it just kind of summed up the evening for the Mizzou Tigers at the Gator Bowl.
I think you, Frank, just pretty accurately explained some of the frustration that Mizzou fans endured down the stretch there. What my question is for you is, you know, we get another game where we see Matt Zollers, you know, what he looked like. The Mizzou offense wasn't really able to do much. Zollers barely passing for over 100 yards. Where are you at on the direction in which the Tigers should take as far as quarterback next year? Do you think they will or should stick with Zollers, or do you expect them to do some dipping into the portal?
Well, there's no way. There's no way you can say from here on out, Matt Zollers is our starting quarterback and we'll go to the portal to get a backup. Yeah, Matt Zollers had a chance to control his own destiny. I mean, if he lit it up at the Gator Bowl, fine. Go get a fifth-year guy to back him up. But now you have to get every piece of every dollar you have and get the best player out of the portal to be your quarterback. There's no way you can go into next season with Matt Zollers as your starter and expect to win in the SEC. Now, I don't want to be critical of the young man. He's only 18 years old, and he may be fine when he's 21. But there's just not many true freshmen or even like second-year quarterbacks thriving in the SEC.
Frank, obviously tonight I came to work decked out in Saber stuff, so we have to talk about the Blues hosting the Red Hot Buffalo Sabres, looking to make it 9 straight. What are you looking for in this game tonight?
Well, you know, the good news is the Blues are playing their best hockey. I know they're running into a Sabres team in a groove, but I like what I've seen out of the Blues the last couple of games. They had a really nice victory on Saturday night against an equally hot Nashville team. And you have a good player named Pavel Buchnevich, who has not played well all season, now starting to feel it. He had 2 goals. This would be a big moment for the Blues. You know, Joe, despite everything that has gone wrong for the Blues, as of yesterday, they were 1 point out of the final playoff spot. So this is a big game for the No tonight. There's no doubt about it.
And then after all of that, Frank, things are starting to look in the right direction. You're getting healthy. Kyrou and Snuggie come back. And now Pugh Suter is going to be out for at least 4 weeks. They just cannot catch a break.
Yeah, that was tough news to get on Sunday that he's not going to be around for a while. But, you know, when you hit Snuggerud and you have Kyrou back, that's big news.
Frank, final question. Well, final one for me. The Cardinals, what are their plans at first base? As you know, Ethan talked about how warm it was a few days ago, and he was ready for baseball. So what are the Cardinals doing at first base?
Well, I don't think it's a big move here. I mean, it's going to be Alec Burleson, who is really a terrific offensive player, and he works like a dog. I think he can be fine at first base. The problem is, if you move him to first, then you either have an opening in left field at a DH, and if you look at that Cardinal roster right now, there's just not enough hitters. I mean, you can't rely on Lars Nootbaar, who's coming off double heel surgery. Jordan Walker and Victor Scott have not hit. So, I mean, you're losing a really good offensive player in Wilson Contreras. So they're going to have to find. And he said, Chaim Bloom said on Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX yesterday, we need to find another at-bat, another bat. And I would not be shocked if they don't kick the tires on Harrison Bader, the former Cardinal who's 31, and he's coming off a terrific offensive player. That's the kind of guy you're going to bring in. You won't bring in a big name, a huge expensive bat, but a guy like Bader may be interesting. He's certainly better than what they have now.
It feels, Frank, up to this point, at least from my perspective, that Chaim Bloom is backing his words that he spoke in his end-of-season press conference talking about the direction in which he wants this team to head. We've seen Sonny Gray get traded away, Wilson Contreras, and the acquisition of Dustin May. How do you feel so far? You know, we're probably about halfway through the offseason, about the job in which Chaim Bloom has done, you know, kind of getting this team in the next phase of where they want to go.
Well, here's the painful reality that St. Louis fans have to realize right now. That if you were to keep Sonny Gray and you were to keep Wilson Contreras and Nolan Arenado and maybe Jojo Romero, you would be under 500 next year with no hope, because those guys would eventually be leaving and you'd get nothing in return. So next year, you're going to be under 500, but you're going to have hope because you are stockpiling the franchise with prospects. And, you know, Brendan Donovan's going to yield a nice return. We got good value for Wilson Contreras. I think you'll get good value for Jojo Romero. So why not be under 500 with hope as opposed to being under 500 with no hope for the future?
Frank, always great catching up with you. Have a very happy new year, my friend.
Okay, guys, take care. Thank you so much.
That is Frank Cusumano, KSDK Sports Director. When we come back, we'll be talking with Brad Young. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.